The following is a Hoop Ball presentation.
What is going on? It is the Hoop Ball Clippers podcast coming at you on a Friday afternoon from Los Angeles after the Clippers drop their opener against the Golden State Warriors in what was an odd game, to say the least. And who's going to break it down with me? None other than Shane Young. You see him on Twitter, at YoungNBA. You see his stuff on Forbes. And he is the man that spent hours upon hours upon hours writing a 2021-2022 LA Clippers season preview that you can download by going to his Twitter. It is pinned to his Twitter. You can go and download that 63-page document. You heard me correctly, 63 pages. He is one of the hardest working men in the business, and he is back on the Hoop Ball Clippers podcast. What's up, Shane?
What an intro, Brandon. I appreciate you, and I'm glad to be back here. It's like my third or fourth time. I love it. We always have a good time. So it's hard to believe it is October 22nd. It's hard to believe we've already seen one game out of 82, and to be honest with you, like I'm not ready for it, but we have to dive right in.
We're going to go backwards. We're going to start with the game yesterday, and then we'll go backwards and talk a little bit about your season preview. First off, the game yesterday, the Clippers go down by 19. You think they're done. I mean, there's no chance whatsoever. They are not going to come back. This is all but over. Steph Curry goes 25 points, 9 of 9 from the field. In the first, a man that you have as one of the top 10 players of all time, and you were adamant about that one. And then all of a sudden, the Clippers come back, and they lead at the half in what is a bizarre first half. Let's start with that first half, and then we'll kind of go with the whole game. What the hell? Like, how does that happen? You have Steph Curry, who is one of the most demoralizing humans in all of basketball, where it feels like his three-pointer is worth more than anybody else's three-pointer, and the Clippers somehow weather that storm and come back to lead at the half. That was one of the strangest halves of basketball I've seen, and it's in game one for the Clippers. Your thoughts?
Well, first of all, imagine how breathtaking that is, that you can call him the most demoralizing figure in basketball, and he's only 6'3", 185.
Yeah.
Like, that's what's hilarious about the whole thing, is that it's not this LeBron-type figure running down the ramp, or running down the lane and killing you. It's some guy that, hell, looks like you and I, like you and me, you know, out there just destroying people. So that was sick to see in the first quarter. I've never seen a quarter like that from a player. I know Clay had 37, but it's like, that wasn't opening night. That was just a random January night. So, like, it was crazy to see Steph come out and do that. But for the Clippers, man, like, I'm not going to say they started out, like, jittery, because it seemed like they understood what they wanted to do offensively. It seemed like they for the most part, they were dialed in. They weren't confused out there. I think what got them in the early 19-point hole was, you know, Golden State's offensive movement and execution. If the Clippers, you know, Ty Lue wants to switch everything except for Zoo. So if you're switching everything except for the center, it gets a little bit tough to kind of communicate and be on your P's and Q's. I mean, if you have one mishap, or, you know, you take one misstep, I think PG said it best in post game, right? He's like, if you're not completely tied to Steph and everything else they do as a team, orchestrating that ball movement, then you're going to make a mistake. And I think the Clippers got backdoor cut quite a few times. I think they botched a couple switches. You know, it's Bledsoe's first real game playing with these guys. You know, I know he played in the preseason, but, you know, they didn't play the Golden State Warriors. Like, it's just a completely different ordeal. So I think, you know, it took a little bit of time for them to get kind of locked in defensively. I thought the offense was fine. That's just me.
Yeah, no, the offense was good. And what's interesting to me is that they came back because of their defense. I mean, as much as you want to say that turnovers are because of the offense, I mean, you got to force turnovers in a way. And the Clippers forced a bunch of turnovers. And that's the reason why they were in this game in the first place, because they were able to come back and get those points off turnovers. And then you go to the second half and you have that 98-90 lead. and the Clippers just get demolished with Steph sitting on the bench. So it's just, it's such a weird game because Steph is the reason why you're losing in the first quarter. And then he's sitting on the bench and you would think, okay, this is an easy chance to add on, but the Clippers get crushed with him sitting. So it's, they didn't take advantage of their opportunities for sure. They didn't do, they didn't do well enough on Steph in the first quarter, and they didn't do well enough with Steph off the floor in the fourth quarter. And you go by, you trail by 19 in the first half, and then you allow a 13-0 run when you're up 98-90. And it's not exactly what the doctor ordered. Just a very odd game, very first game about it. I mean, this is the type of stuff that happens in the first game. You go and you go down big, and then you fix your mistakes, and then you're not able to capitalize. And for me, I was talking to my brother after the game. I'm like, here's the deal. First of all, Marcus Morris didn't play all preseason, so he was rusty. Yeah. I mean, he made that absurd three-pointer in the corner, but he was not the guy you're used to seeing. Batum was out. Ibaka was out. Reggie Jackson was awful until very late in the game. There's just a lot that you're able to improve upon, and despite all that, you only lost by two. So, I mean, I think there is some certainly positives to take away from this ball game with all that stuff that I just mentioned with Morris and Batum and Ibaka and Reggie Jackson, that the Clippers can be absolutely much better than they were last night.
Yeah, I thought for one thing, Reggie's shot selection was pretty bad for 90% of the game. I mean, you know, I think later in the second half, he took shots that you want him to take because he's fearless, and you need someone like that, especially on the road, to just believe that he can knock down those threes or those insane floaters. But, you know, in the early portion of the game, I thought he was forcing quite a bit. You know, you got to love Reggie and his confidence, but at some point that you got to dial that back. He kind of looked more like bubble Reggie than last season Reggie, if I must say. And I think PG, like we definitely had to give him his flowers, had to give him credit. In that second quarter, only played 8 minutes and 47 seconds. You know, didn't play the entire second quarter, but still 6 of 7 from the field, 16 points. One thing that I'm really loving from PG in the last 2 years, I know he started doing it a lot in Oklahoma City, or some in Oklahoma City, but when he got to the Clippers, he has right next to Harden, and I don't think KD even really has this, because KD is more like east to west shiftiness to get you off balance than shoot. PG has this stuff where, like, he'll start at the perimeter, you know, line drive into the paint. Well, not into the paint, but like towards the elbow, and just stop on a dime, hard plant with his left foot, or I think it's a left or right foot, and just completely create the most separation you can ever imagine from a guy that size. So I thought, like, he was really burning Golden State up with those mid-range jumpers, and then in transition off threes, not being afraid to let it fly. So if he did not do that in that second quarter, it would have been over quickly.
Now, let me ask you something. I want to go back to what you just said about Reggie Jackson. What type of player does he need to be? Because you mentioned that he needs to be last year's Reggie Jackson, not bubble Reggie Jackson. I feel like he needs to be somewhere in between for this Clippers team to do well, because you don't have Kawhi Leonard. So last year, you could be Reggie Jackson and have Kawhi there and PG there, but there is no Kawhi. So it feels like there certainly is a lot more on Reggie Jackson's shoulders scoring-wise, and I think he certainly felt that yesterday in terms of him needing to be that guy, because you look at the Clippers and their starting lineup, and you're not going to get what you got from Bledsoe every game. I mean, that was obviously very impressive. He had a great game. Bledsoe is certainly a player that has it in his bag of tricks to do what he did yesterday and do it in several ball games. But between Reggie Jackson and Bledsoe and Morris and Zoo and PG, I mean, you look at that lineup and it really is PG 1, and offensively it's probably Reggie Jackson 2. So what exactly do you see there?
I've been chewing on this for a bit. Even when I was writing my preview, when I got to the Eric Bledsoe section, it kind of bleeds together with Reggie, because I actually kind of disagree. I think that Bledsoe probably needs to be the second guy in terms of, at least in terms of line drives and penetration, and I guess not overall usage, because Reggie's still probably gonna take more shots off, you know, catch and shoots and whatnot. But I think just on ball usage, I think Bledsoe needs to be number two. That's just my opinion. I'm not sure how you feel about that, but you know, for me, the ideal role with this team when it comes to Reggie it was different with Kawhi because Kawhi's not this, like, you know, I keep saying north-south, but he's not this guy that's just going to get into the paint at will every time off of speed, you know. But I think Bledsoe is. I think Bledsoe is going to be able to collapse the defense to that degree. He's probably the best driver on the team just because of how fast he still is. It's kind of remarkable. It took me back, you know, watching him in the preseason. I did not think that he was going to be that fast. He sure as hell didn't look that fast in New Orleans. We should say that. Looked like his prime Milwaukee days, though. I think Reggie's best role is going to be attacking off closeouts, attacking on the second side. So, you know, if the defense collapses a little bit, oh, Reggie's open on the wing, throw it to him, whether that's Bledsoe or PG, whoever it is, throws it to Reggie, and then he attacks off a hard closeout. Because if Reggie catches with 3 or 4 feet of space, you know that defender is going to dart at him with full speed. You know they are scared to death, petrified of Reggie shooting after last year's numbers, especially in the playoffs. So I think Reggie's best, like, you know, strength will be attacking off the shifted and unbalanced defenses, that if that makes sense.
It does. And does that mean that you think he's more of an off the ball type guy that's going to be one of their better shooters and not a guy that should be creating his shot as much as perhaps maybe a guy like Bledsoe that's able to get to the paint?
That's just my take. And, you know, I think it's also important to understand for, you know, listeners that when you say that, it doesn't mean that Reggie's never going to get opportunities to drive, right? It doesn't mean that Reggie's just going from, let's say, 11 drives like he did last night, 11 drives to the rim down to like two. I mean, they're still going to be sprinkled in there. I really do think a good role for him would be, you know, as one of these like microwave scorers off the bench. I think he should still start. But, you know, in bench lineups, I mean, that's where he's really going to get his cooking done when Bledsoe's on the floor. I just kind of think if he's the one that's doing the driving for the most part, then you're relying on Bledsoe for some catch and shoots, which we saw him miss quite a bit last night. I mean, I think he made one, but, you know, he had a couple late in the game that, you know, rimmed out. So I would much rather have Reggie as like the, you know, I guess the bailout threat in those situations. I think I'd rather have PG and Eric downhill predominantly within the offense.
Well, that was certainly the book on Eric Bledsoe coming in, is that his one weakness is going to be that he's not as good of a three-point shooter as Pat Bev. And so that's probably the one weakness.
Yeah.
Whereas Eric Bledsoe was able to create his own shot. I mean, the guy was 10 of 16 from the field, and he was getting to the paint at will and was showing off, like you said, his speed. And he's got major power. He's a small dude, but he's strong, and you saw that yesterday. Now, you look at the shot selection, Shane, and so you look at the shot numbers, rather. 23 field goal attempts for PG, 19 for Reggie Jackson, 16 for Bledsoe. Is that close to what you think it should be like, or do you think some of those numbers need to be higher, some of them need to be lower?
Well, you know, you kind of touched on the Marcus Morris situation. Obviously, Morris probably needs to be above 7, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's going to change. I think we saw this before, and ironically, it was in the Bay Area. I think when he made his return in January or so, you know, after that knee soreness to begin last season, he looked really bad in Golden State. He looked really bad in a couple games. Then he started coming together. You know, February, March is when Marcus Morris looked like the best shooter in the world, you know, outside of a couple guys. So I think Marcus is going to take some time. I'm more concerned about his defense, but that's another topic. But in terms of shot distribution, man, like last night was kind of close to what I think it should be. I think they really had a great offensive night, generated 40 threes. I think 18 of them were, you know, bare naked looks, wide open. That's almost half your shots, or, you know, not even contested. It's more about, to me, getting to the rim, getting to the foul line, which, you know, Bledsoe only 3 foul attempts, but, you know, that should go up the more aggressive he is. Let me ask you, though, like, if they have this shot selection, this shot distribution with Bledsoe taking 16 shots and Reggie taking 19 shots, are you concerned about, you know, Bledsoe's health? Are you concerned about as many times as he hit the deck? He was on the floor longer than he was standing last night, it seemed like. Are you concerned that he won't hold up?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that, because I was looking at that Bledsoe number, and 16, I think, is far too many shots for him. I mean, that's
probably 12 for me, you know, 12
yeah,
or so.
Yeah, that's certainly high usage. I mean, if Bledsoe's going 6 of 12 from the field, and that's even higher than who he's going to end up being at, because you're not going to shoot 50% if you're Eric Bledsoe. But 12 shots, I think 12 to 13 is reasonable. 16's a lot. Four threes, I think, is going to end up being what he takes around 3 to 4 a game. Yeah. I mean,
he cannot turn down the threes. That's right. That's what pissed Ty Lue off.
Yeah, exactly. And that happened with Luke Kennard, is that we've seen him not take the threes when he's been open. I mean, he was 1 of 5 from distance yesterday, but people forget how good Luke was from three last year. I mean, he was over 45% from distance. So he's a really good 3-point shooter. You got to take him if you have him. And with this offense, the ball moves so quickly, and there's so much get to the paint and kick it that you got to take them. But if you're Bledsoe and you're getting to the paint and you're going into those centers and you're going to those big bodies, you got to be careful. I definitely think that he's got to be careful with what he's doing. He's got to pick his spots. But at the same time, this offense surely needs to move with him at the helm. And it's going to be interesting because, like you said, Marcus Morris, 7 shots. He probably needs to get more than that. Reggie Jackson, though, I mean, that's a lot of usage. 19 shots is certainly a lot. And with PG, I think the one thing that really is a positive, and I was talking to Schaap about this last week, was that Paul George, I think, needs to get back to what he was doing when he was with OKC during that 18-19 season when he was attempting close to 10 threes a game. And,
oh, my God, you're preaching to the choir, man.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking about that, and Schaap's like, he needs to take more threes. And I'm like, you're certain the way we describe PG during our season preview was that he needs to get back to that guy that was with OKC in 18-19 when he shot 9.5 threes per game. And he didn't have more than 8 in any other season in his career. So every other season was below 8. So you need to become that guy that gets at least 10 threes a game. And he was yesterday, 5 of 11.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a great 3-point shooter. And you go 5 of 11, man, that's instantly 15 points. And then you add in jumpers. And then one of these days he'll get love from referees and get to the free throw line. And you're looking at 25 to 28 points per game.
It might take him $500,000 in fines to get there, though.
Yeah.
He's probably going to get fined today. I wouldn't be surprised if we see that announcement later. But for PG, you're completely right. And Schaap's right. Like, I think, you know, collectively, I think, you know, even Justin Wilson and all of us have been clamoring, like, if you're not taking 12 to 13 threes a game, hell, I'm of the mindset it needs to be 13. And that's just because, like, that would even out his distribution. I mean, 13 threes, you know, 10 twos, that's 23 shots. That's probably where he needs to be, man. You know, somewhere around that range. I think the assistant coaches and film and video coordinators of the Clippers should just sit PG down and show him a couple of clips from when he pulled up last night. He pulled up on the left side with a guy directly in his face, no breathing room at all, drilled it, nothing but net. And then in transition, which is where I think he can get even more aggressive. That to me is the next step in his progression. It's not the Steph and Dame stuff, because that's just absurdity. You're not ever going to expect that from a 6'9 guy. But it's the semi-transition. Oh, I'm you know, going 85% speed, not full sprint down the court, but I see that Andrew Wiggins has his feet below the 3-point line. When I'm driving or when I'm, you know, about to pick up my dribble, I'm just going to shoot. I think that's what he needs to do. More semi-transition threes where the defense can't really contest because they're kind of scared of his drive. That's where he'll get them in trouble. And to be honest with you, like, it needs to be 13 or 14 threes for him, because if he's not going to get to the line, you have to make that up some way, right?
Yeah, and the question is, if you're taking 13 to 14 threes, you're probably not going to get to the line. So you got to find that happy medium. It's tough. It's tough. And with PG, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to ask you, like, you know, with PG, I think what helped him and what's going to help him, especially offensively this year, having more energy, is if he doesn't have to exert all this other, you know, effort and energy on defense on the best guy on the other team, whether that was Steph, whether that is LeBron, whoever it is. You know, I think Terrence Mann is somebody that he kind of has to be paired with for a large portion of the game. I'm not exactly sure the minute total that he played with Terrence last night. We could look easily, but I mean, I feel like they played a lot of Terrence's 39 minutes together. And that number to me, above all the shot selection, above all of the stuff we've been talking about so far, Terrence's 39 minutes. I mean, the trust that Ty has in that guy after, you know, one good playoff run, a half a good playoff run, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, it's nuts. And I was going to say with PG, the one thing that you got to love is that his rebounding numbers are still up there. And so that he is certainly a guy that is aggressive, getting to the glass. And he's what he does is when he gets those rebounds, he's able to start the offense instantly. So he's able to bring it up and become that point guard. And then he also had 6 assists yesterday. So overall, I think I really enjoy what I saw from PG yesterday. He did exactly what he needs to do. He just needs to get to the free throw line a little bit more, but some of that is not up to him. And then with Bledsoe, I mean, you got to get to the hole, and he did exactly that. Reggie Jackson just has to be better. And the one thing that now I think is worth talking about, and you bring up Terrence Mann, is the minutes. So Terrence Mann, 39 minutes, which he's certainly not going to play on a nightly basis, but 11.7 rebounds, 3 assists, 1 steal, and like you said, most importantly, his defense was great. But then you look at Zoo, and Zoo was only playing 17 last night. And let's not forget that Zoo has played off the court against the Warriors a couple of years ago. So clearly not the best fit. And I think he's going to be better than this most nights. But your thoughts on the small lineup and not having a second center, not playing Hartenstein, and instead going with Winslow or PG at the five or Marcus Morris at the five, and playing Terrence Mann the minutes that he did and not playing Zoo very many minutes?
Yeah, it's probably the number one question for Ty Lue this entire year. It's how much can you afford to go small? How much do you want to go small? Whenever you have seen Zubat's value against traditional bigs like, you know, Ayton, I think he did really well on Ayton. Ayton still had some really high scoring totals in that series, but you know, I think Zoo proved that he's ready to take the next step. And he can, and Zoo has said, like, his conditioning, he can play 30 if he wants to. He could play 30 plus if he wanted to. The staff just has to let him do it, and he has to stay out of foul trouble. But, you know, I think the small ball lineups give them such an advantage, man, that it's hard. You have to weigh the pros and the cons. And I think with Ty, it always goes back to what we saw in Cleveland. I think every decision he makes with this Clippers team, or most of them, it's going to go back to what he kind of tailored his offense to, or his defensive switching to in Cleveland. So I think, you know, you look and see how often that Cavs team went small in the playoffs, or even in the regular season down the stretch. I mean, during his last year there in 2018, didn't see a lot of Tristan Thompson, you know, lineups whenever the games were close like this. Didn't see a lot of, you know, you saw Kevin Love at center. For the most part. And I think that is kind of what you're going to see as long as Morris and Batum can hold up. You know, and that's also part of the dilemma. It's how much can you afford to put Marcus out there banging against fives? You hope at least that his offensive usage is strictly catch and shoot threes to where he's not, you know, getting into trouble trying to create off the dribble and maybe getting hurt. So I think if it's just predominantly a catch and shoot system for Marcus and Nick as the center, then it kind of lowers the risk, or it lowers the opportunity for, you know, disaster there. So I think they could hold up playing small. If it were me, I would probably increase Zoo's minutes a little bit more and not go as small as much as that. To me, it was a little bit too much at times, but what we've seen it. I mean, you know, guard setting screens for Paul George, guard setting screens for Terrence Mann. You know, it's kind of just been a staple of Lue's offensive system. And I think he's somebody that wants to play that way, wants to kind of speed up the tempo. And also, like, you're not going to switch Zoo onto Steph. You're not going to switch Zoo onto any, you know, pick your most deadliest, you know, your deadly threat out there on the court every night. So I think we're going to see small ball more than last year. I just don't know how much.
And also, once Ibaka's healthy, that changes things. I mean, you'll have a second center.
Everyone forgets about Ibaka.
Yeah, and I mean, for rightly so, because the guy's never healthy. He's never on the floor. And so once he's back, that will change things. I mean, you put Ibaka on the floor instead of Winslow, and you put Batum on the floor instead of Coffey. And Shane, they've got a pretty damn good 9-man rotation for a team that doesn't have Kawhi Leonard. I mean,
Amir Coffey, 15 minutes in a game against a potential Western Conference playoff foe.
And he was plus 14 in his 15 minutes. I mean, he wasn't bad. He didn't score. I mean, he was 0 for 3 from the field and 5 for 5 from the line, including those free throws at the end that gave them the lead, which was, or was that at halftime? At halftime, I think it was, that gave them the lead. that nonetheless, it's impressive. And Winslow playing 14, Coffee playing 15 is not exactly what you want. Same with Terrence Mann playing 39. So I think it's hard to actually get a full grasp of what this team is going to be after that first game, but you have an idea.
Yeah, man, like the whole surge dynamic kind of just throws it, it's another challenge for Ty, honestly, even though it's like another top 50 guy, or, you know, at his prime, you know, top 50 guy in the league, even though you're adding that to your rotation, still, like, at the same time, it's going to take minutes away from somebody. And it gets really tough when you have a team this deep. I argued in my preview that this is the best, this is the deepest team in the NBA. If, I mean, Brooklyn is up there. Brooklyn's probably number one when they have everyone there, but Kyrie's MIA, as always, right? I think the Clippers from 1 to 9, 1 to 10, and if you include Hartenstein, I mean, you know, that gets to be the deepest team in the league to me. And if Serge is there, I don't know, because, like, you know, in matchups like this, as athletic and mobile as Serge still is, like, I don't think that it would have changed much on defense. On offense, he could have abused the Warriors' smalls, you know, or the Warriors' bigs down low and gotten, you know, to his patented hook, or gotten to the foul line a little bit more. But defensively, I mean, you don't want him switch on the perimeter. You know, you'd still have him in drop coverage. So I don't know. I mean, it's going to be a dynamic that I'm interested to see. Hopefully he's back in early November.
Yeah, hopefully he's back soon. I think he's just trying to get his conditioning up. Before we put a bow on this game, folks, got to tell you that whenever I started this podcast, people always started asking me, what am I doing? Who am I betting on? Where am I betting? I tell them I'm doing it at mybookie.ag. Their rep is rock solid. They've got the best odds, contests, and promotions in the business. They've got the odds boost to give you free money. They've got blackjack. They've got Premier League. They've got college football. They've got NFL. They've got NBA, hockey. It's all there. Up-to-the-minute lines, live betting as well. Sign up now. Enter the promo code HOOPBALL. Get your deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. That's the promo code HOOPBALL. And get your deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. Head over to MyBookie if you want to add a little excitement to the sports you love and the games you bet. If you need a little bit of help, hit up the guys at the HoopBall Gaming Department. They do a great job there. They've got the wager pass. They're giving out those plays. So if you want them to help you out, go ahead, sign up there. Follow the Twitter handle as well. They do a great job making sure that they add some money to your wallet. Bet with the best. Bet with my bookie. Okay, Shane, so let's put a bow on this ball game. Let's go player by player and kind of go expectations. So Marcus Morris, agree or disagree that we just think that he needs to get healthy and he will eventually get to that 10, 11 shots per game, and I think we'll get a stable floor from him.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think, you know, for him, it comes down to showing that he's not creaky on defense, showing that he can actually move, because, I mean, he got burned quite a bit last night.
Yeah, Marcus Morris, that's one. Zoo, 17 minutes. I think we need to see his minutes go up. He needs to be a little more efficient from the free throw line. 6 of 10 is not going to cut it, but 14 points in 17 minutes is really good for a guy like Zoo. I think we want to see him closer to that 22, 25 minutes. Agree?
I was exactly going to say 22, and I think that we're in for his best year around the rim. I mean, his hands are getting a lot better. That's at least what I saw.
Reggie Jackson just needs to be more efficient, play within the offense.
Yeah, kind of dial it back a little bit. It's hard to say that, though, whenever he is still on cloud nine from that playoff run. Like, you never want to be the guy that says, okay, whatever worked for you, let's chill out. But to me, I would whisper, yeah, chill out.
Bledsoe, love the aggressiveness. I think that we are not going to see that high of usage, though, 16 shots per night. But I think we saw last night what we're going to get from him, a guy that's going to be good defensively, 3 steals and a block, and he's going to struggle a little bit from 3, needs to be a little better at the free throw line, but nonetheless, a guy that's going to get easy shots because he's able to blow past defenders.
Number one thing for Bledsoe coming up, especially against Memphis on Saturday and the future games as well, transition. As soon as he pulls down the rebound or gets the go-ahead pass from Zoo, attack. And I think that he is someone that can help, you know, in that regard, because they didn't really, you know, Pat Bev's not going to attack in transition. So I think they have someone that can get downhill in transition at least now.
I think with PG, we saw yesterday what we're going to get from him. Unlike the other guys where it seems like there's some movement up, some movement down, less shots, more shots. It seems like yesterday we got what we're going to get from PG.
Yeah. His career high is like 28 a game. I think this year he pushed it to 20, exactly what he got last night. I think he's going to get 29 a game this year.
Wow. There you go. Terrence Mann, a lot of minutes. I don't think we expect that on a nightly basis, but we love the defense, love the rebounding. 7 rebounds for a guy that's his size, I think, is huge. So I said it in the preview show with Shap. I think Terrence Mann is a very sneaky sixth man of the year candidate. I think we saw what we're going to get from him yesterday, though.
Hilarious that you say that, because there's another bench guy that I picked for sixth man of the year that's probably not going to win it now, but he's on the Clippers as well. We'll get to him. But yeah, when it comes to Terrence, like, for me, like, the biggest, I guess, like, improvement or the biggest thing that I'm looking for this year is attacking like that with reckless abandon, but also, like, not turning the ball over. So, I mean, no turnovers last night in 39 minutes. That's tough to do for a third-year guard. I mean, you know, I think he's under control now.
Is that sixth man of the year guy Luke Kennard? Are you on Luke Island with Shap? Because Shap had that prediction during our preview show.
Oh, he did? Okay, well, I guess he joined Raya Ward then, because I think Joseph also is on that train. I didn't pick Luke to win it. I thought he'd be in the top three.
Yeah.
But to me, I mean, if he's only going to get, you know, the 24 minutes, if he's going to get beat out in the rotation by Terrence, and he's not going to – I mean, he took five threes in 24 minutes – I guess you kind of want more, but, you know, Golden State was playing them kind of close. It's tough to say. I kind of need 10 games of Luke before I can make a determination.
Well, and also, you don't see very many games where Luke has almost as many twos as he does threes. I mean, normally most of his shots are from three, but he had 9 shots and 5 of them were from three. So he was chased off that 3-point line and settled for a couple of jumpers, and he didn't connect on some of them, going 3 of 9, which means that he was 2 for 4 on his twos. He could be a little bit better in terms of being wide open and taking the shot from 12 to 15 feet. Winslow and Coffee, those are guys I don't think are going to play a whole lot, but I think Winslow was an interesting case to see him yesterday. Shows that he's able to play different positions and a guy that can rebound a little bit as well. So I think Winslow was fine, but not a guy that I think is
mobile.
Yeah.
I love how mobile Justice looks on the perimeter moving around. Steph still got around anyone because he's Steph Curry, but I mean, Justice made it really hard during his minutes.
Yeah, I think as long as he's able to work hard and just be a guy that the Clippers can count on when they need him, it'll be positive. Okay, cool. So that puts a bow on things. The Clippers overall, I think there's a lot to be pretty confident about. I mean, you heard Shane just say it, that he thinks the Clippers are the deepest team in the NBA when healthy. And you look at what they did yesterday and what they're capable of with Morris, what Zoo's capable of. Reggie Jackson, Bledsoe, George, Mann, Kennard, Batum, Baca. I mean, there's a lot of talent there. And this is a team that doesn't have the star power of a Kawhi Leonard, but certainly has a guy in PG that has been an MVP candidate before. So you put PG with all these guys that know their role, and it fits the team well. So let's go ahead, and that kind of transitions us beautifully to your Clippers preview. 63 pages. You are a crazy man. Some beautiful artwork in there as well, including the cover. Let's talk about the Clippers and your expectations for them, because we've seen one game, so I don't think that can really change things. Your thoughts on what a reasonable finish for the Clippers would be, because I was saying that I think the 6 or 7 seed probably is the biggest or it's probably the best option in terms of if you're going to put money on it, but they could probably finish as high as 4 and as low as 9 or 10.
Yeah, it's really, I think this year, and I feel like I say this every year, I feel like we all say this every year, this was the toughest season to predict in the entire West. I mean, there's just so many curveballs, so many unknowns. We don't know if Denver is going to be, like, you know, this top-tier team until they get Jamal back. I thought they were really good last year when Jamal got hurt. So can you kind of pencil in Denver as this, like, you know, top-three team? Maybe. But for me, I'm sure you've seen on Twitter that I wholeheartedly think Utah is the best team in the West. If Kawhi is not on the Clippers, right? I think if Kawhi is on the Clippers, their ceiling is the one seed, and they're, to me, a finals team. The Clippers are. But if you take Kawhi off for most of the season, which, you know, I think I was on your show and we talked about, you know, maybe like, you know, March or April for me. I'm still around there for March. Return for Kawhi. We'll see. He looks pretty good. Just stand still shooting. I think as currently constructed, this Clippers team has a range from 41 wins at their bottom worst, probably, unless everything just goes wrong health-wise. But I think 41 wins realistically is probably their floor. And I put in my preview 53 wins would be my best case scenario if Kawhi doesn't play the season. So that assumes, you know, PG just has this, you know, top three MVP finish. He's a finalist for the award, and he's All-NBA first team. This assumes, like, Bledsoe is exactly what they wanted and more. And Bledsoe probably is, like, you know, all-defensive team in that scenario. But, you know, for me, I kind of went in the middle. It's kind of what you have to do. I don't know where you stand, but for me, I have the Clippers at 48 wins, 34 losses. I think their offense will suffer compared to what we saw last year. I'm not saying the shooting is, like, you know, going to regress back to the mean to where, like, everyone was kind of like, oh, well, this is not sustainable at all. And it actually was sustainable for 72 games. So, you know, I think people had to eat their words on that one. I do think it will take a couple steps back because you don't have Kawhi absorbing that defensive pressure as much, because Kawhi played 52 games last year. That's a lot to not have in your arsenal now. So I think their offense will go down to, like, you know, eighth or ninth maybe. And then their defense, it's going to have a lot of hiccups in the early goings, as we saw last night. First half looked disastrous, you know, in stretches, and they kind of got things together. I think their defense will be about league average. So if you bottle all that together, it's a 48-win team, 6 seed. I think you hit the nail on the head. 6 is where you should expect this Clippers team to finish, with, you know, the likes of Denver, maybe Golden State, Utah, Phoenix,
the Lakers. You know,
let me ask you. This is what I want to get into. Mm-hmm. I do not think, Brandon, it is a hot take to suggest after 20 or 30 games the Clippers have a better record than Lakers.
I think that's possible. The Clippers have a better schedule. I mean, their first 15 games, I looked at it when it came out, and I thought 11-4 was certainly doable. I'm not sure that's going to continue to be the case, but the Lakers certainly have a lot that they need to figure out. And Russell Westbrook doesn't quite fit well with this team, and it's going to be really bumpy for them.
That's being very mild.
Yes,
about it too.
Yes. And listen, they may never figure it out, but I think Vogel's a good enough coach, and I think LeBron is good enough at basketball where they'll be able to figure it out, and they'll start winning games. It could be an issue in the playoffs, but yeah, regular season-wise, I think in the first 2 months, I think you're right that it's possible the Clippers are better initially, and then the Lakers really go on a nice run where they win 15 of 18 or something like that.
What do you think about that? What do you think about that range of 41 wins as their probably their worst, assuming normal health, and 53 wins being their best?
For the Clippers, I think 53 is probably too high. I think that's too optimistic. Okay.
If everything goes right, maybe?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Kawhi comes back, obviously. I think that's a little more reasonable. But you're giving that as Kawhi not being there. And I just feel like you're going to have to sit Paul George for load management at some point.
Yeah.
It's just inevitable that guys like Marcus Morris, Ibaka, Batum will be sitting games, could get hurt. So injuries, I think you need to stay healthy for sure. I mean, every team needs to, but especially this Clippers team, where, sure, they have a lot of depth, but at the same time, if they get a couple of injuries, that depth quickly disappears. So,
yeah,
I think you look
and
at.
And I think.
Go ahead.
I was just gonna say, I think a lot of people tend to forget as well is, like, you know, I've seen people have, you know, the Clippers at, you know, in the play-in game, but have, like, you know, all these wins. It's like it takes a lot of wins to get out of that. I mean, last year might have been different. I think we saw Golden State get in there, but Golden State was in the play-in tournament when Steph. When they were, like, you know, 30 and 21 with Steph. Like, I mean, that was a good winning percentage, and they still were in there. It's going to take a lot of wins for the Clippers to get out of the play-in. So, you know, there's probably more, like, there's a greater chance that they are in the play-in tournament. I think everyone should realize that. But if PG plays 65, 70 games, I mean, I kind of just trust what they have depth-wise once Ibaka and Batum are there.
Yeah, and Ty Lue's obviously a really good coach, so that certainly helps. And what I was going to say is you look at the Clippers and their numbers yesterday, and I think the 43-point attempts is really good. I think this is a team that shoots the three well, a team that has a lot of snipers. I think with Bledsoe able to get to the paint and able to kick, and same thing with guys like PG and Reggie Jackson. I mean, you have a lot of guys and that can certainly contribute once Batum gets back and Ibaka gets back. You have more perimeter offense as well. So I like seeing the 43s. I think this is a team that isn't the most talented when it comes to going one-on-one at times. But if you have 95 shots and 40 are threes, there are going to be games where you can't hit a damn thing. But there are going to be games where you shoot 40 to 45% and you win in blowouts. So I kind of like that number of 40 of the 95. What about you? Do you think that's reasonable? 43s, 95 attempts?
That's probably where it needs to be. I know Ty probably wants a few more. And someone else mentioned, I think it was Ryan Snellings on Twitter, mentioned that once Batum's back, I mean, the Clippers only generated 7 corner threes last night, I think. So, I mean, it might have been a little bit more, but I know it was 7% of their total shots, so it was around seven corner threes. Once Batum's back, I mean, that opens the door for 3 or 4 more. You know, Marcus will get more. We know he'll get more shots than that. So I think their offense is going to be analytic friendly this year. Last year, it was just a lot of mid-range shots and a lot of threes, you know, off the dribble, and catch and shoots as well. But I think this year we're going to see Bledsoe really helping them out when it comes to collapsing that defense and creating those corner looks.
Cool. I'm glad that we kind of agree there in terms of what it looks like for the Clippers going forward. One final thing I got to tell you guys about before we close things up, and that is our friend Manscaped. Moy, they do such a great job. They get the job done quickly, safely, and hygienically. Gotta tell you guys, if you're not getting that Manscaped Lawnmower 4.0, I don't know what you are waiting for. Between that and the Ultra Smooth Package, that brand new Lawnmower 4.0, perfect for anybody that wants to up their grooming game. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code HOOPBALL20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with code HOOPBALL20 at manscaped.com. Below the belt grooming taken to the highest degree. The ability to turn the 4000K LED spotlight on and off when you need a more precise shave, perfect. Multifunction on-off switch can engage in a travel lock, perfect. Additional guard lengths of sizes 1 to 4, trim to your liking, perfect. They've got everything you need, everything you want. Check out their website. Check out all their products. I got to tell you, their stuff is great. 20% off and free shipping with code HOOPBALL20 at manscaped.com. All right, Shane, let's finish off this podcast. Tell me how long it took you to do this preview. I need to know because it looked like hours upon hours upon hours of work, and it's incredible.
Thank you, man. Thank you so much for the kind words and just for, you know, allowing me to talk about it, I guess. But, you know, it's something that I've been wanting to do for a while. I mean, I kind of started, I think I told you off the air last time we recorded, but in 2019, I kind of got the idea from my former editors, like, to do a season preview of all 30 teams. So each team got their own section, which was 3 pages. That was like 90 pages right off the bat. But then you throw in some, you know, player rankings and intros and all that type of stuff. And my first one in 2019, which I could link you all to, was 143 pages. And that one took me obviously a lot longer because I started that like in late July after free agency ended, and I didn't get done until October 21st that year. So it's been 2 years since I dropped that one. But, you know, predominantly covering the Clippers, as you all know, it's just a fun team to cover. I was like, you know, let me do it just on them. Let me kind of tailor it to them. So instead of every team getting their own section, I gave every player their own section, 3 pages worth. I started the idea. I started like the writing and the construction in InDesign, which is the program I use. I had to like learn InDesign again because it's been 2 years. I completely forgot how to use it. So I had to get the subscription back and learn it over like a week period. Then that was like early to mid August when I started that. And the writing started late August. So as you can imagine, let's call it August 27th to October, whatever it was, 19th is whenever I did all the writing. It you know, there were some days, I'm sure you can imagine.
Yeah.
I'm sure you've had a project that you've been working on and you have days where you just completely do not even want to look at it without getting disgusted. You feel like you just don't even want to look at it. You just don't want to work on it. There were days like that. That's kind of what held me back. I mean, I know I told you that I was going to drop it, you know, early October, and that was the plan. But, you know, life gets in the way, and writer's block got in the way, especially once I got down to, like, you know, Justice Winslow and all the rookies. And then I had to wait till Hartenstein made the team to even do his section because I didn't want to have to erase it and do Harry Giles. So it took quite a while, man.
Yeah, and it's incredible, man, to do that much content and to write that much about one team is unbelievable. So everyone go to Shane's Twitter, at YoungNBA. You can download the document. It's still very relevant, obviously. We're only one game in. And you mentioned, Shane, the good start for the Clippers. And you look at the schedule, and next up is Memphis. And that will be at home on Saturday. And then Portland, Cleveland, Portland, OKC, Minnesota, Minnesota, before you get to Charlotte, Portland, Miami. So, I mean, you look at the next several games, and you're at home for the next three with Memphis, Portland, and Cleveland. I feel like you need to go, I think, 2-1 at the very worst. 3-0 is certainly reasonable for this Clippers team.
Oh, and let's talk, you know, about that. I mean, you know, if they do, let's say they do win all these games coming up. I mean, Portland already losing in a heartbreaking fashion in their opener. I mean, Portland's in disaster territory if they start off the season poorly, which is probably going to happen.
And they're a good team. I mean, Chauncey's going to take a little bit to get his footing underneath them as head coach there. But Lillard, McCollum, Covington, Nurkic, and Powell, I mean, they've got a good starting five, but they've got to figure it all out. And it doesn't help when one of your players is in trade rumors for Ben Simmons. So,
it's fascinating that the Clippers have, you know, all but four home games in November. I mean, November, you know, I should say I put the schedule, full length schedule, in the preview as well. So if anyone has the preview, they can just load it up that way as well. But like all the home games are backloaded, you know, or front loaded in November. I mean, there's a lot. I mean, they could definitely string together a stretch kind of like last year where I remember last year they were like 17-6, you know, looking like one of the most dominant teams in the league. They could definitely have that this year.
And I think I just counted it. 10 of the first 14 are at home, which is certainly very helpful. And then you got two road games, and then you come back and you've got six in a row at home. And then the next game is at the Lakers. So that's technically a home game as well. So a lot of home games. I think we agree that the Clippers need to get off to a hot start if they want to have a chance to avoid that play-in game, and you certainly have the ability to get a hot start with this schedule. Cool. Shane, anything else you want to go ahead and promote?
I don't think there's anything for me to promote, really. I mean, for me, my work is going to be kind of the same as last year. You know, I'll probably write twice a week. I'm trying to get some more games under my belt to kind of do like a video breakdown, not necessarily just on the Clippers. Like there's a lot of teams out there. I kind of want to see what they're running offensively. Utah being one of them. So I guess just look out for some of my videos I do this year.
At YoungNBA, you can read his stuff on Forbes. Shane, big thank you joining the pod.
Hey, thank you for having me, man. Let's do this, especially when I'm in town. You know, it might be in that November stretch when there's a lot of home games, so we'll get together.
Let's do it. He's Shane Young. I'm Brandon Marcus. Next up for the Clippers, Saturday. That is tomorrow against Memphis. And then Monday and Wednesday, we'll be back at some point next week to break down the Clippers and how they're doing. So until next time, you can follow me on Twitter at BD Marcus. You can follow the Twitter handle for the Clippers at Hoopball Clips for the Clippers podcast account for Hoopball. Until next time, I'm Brandon. Have a great one and go Clips.
This has been a Hoopball presentation.